Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Well, hello, and welcome to Chef Story. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and I'm here at Roberta's in Brooklyn, and there's a little construction going on, so you may hear some funny sounds, and I promise it's not coming from our great chef today. Today, I'm so excited because we have with us one of the greatest pastry chefs in the world, François Payat. And it's just not me saying he's one of the greatest pastry chefs in the world. In 1995, he won the James Beard Pastry Chef of the Year. That means the best pastry chef in the United States. 1998, Bon Appetit Pastry Chef of the Year. 2001, he won the International Pastry Competition Committee Pastry Chef of the Year. In 2004, he got the Ordre du Mérite Agricole, the Medal of Honor by the French government. The Wine Spectator even gave him awards. And the Relais Desserts International put him in the best 85 pastry chefs in the world. And the one I love the most is the 2010 Dom Pérignon Award of Excellence. Welcome, François.
Thank you.
Welcome to Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and I think this is your first trip out here. We're going to have a nice pizza when we finish, but I can't tell you how excited I am because you are one of the most delicious chefs in the world, and I've been a big fan for a long time. So, and I know you are a third-generation pastry chef. So tell me, what was it like? You grew up in Nice, in France. So tell me, what was it like growing up with your father and your grandfather being pastry chefs?
I don't know. Most people, they think I'm born in the chocolate bowl. I think it's very difficult because you have to always think about your parents, your grandparents, and you always have to make sure that you have to keep the legacy going. But when I was little, it was much more like a learning experience because I was trying to help my grandpa at the age of 6, 8, you know. I was not doing much.
What did he have you do at the age of 6 or 8?
The chocolate truffles.
Oh, and you were rolling. The truffles are the little bonbon, you know, little round chocolate things.
Yes, I was rolling the truffles around the cocoa, but I was having cocoa all over my face too at the same time.
Do they have those conveyor belts with the truffles coming out, or how did they make the chocolates back then?
No, my grandpa was pretty much everything in France like 25 years ago. Everything was really handmade. You know, the truffles, he was dipping the chocolate, putting the chocolate on the tray, and I was using a forks and rolling the cocoa all around the truffles. Most people are still doing like that, or now they use this machine, but I think in the old days, you know, everything was so pride to say everything is handmade. Mm-hmm. And in the days, you don't want to see machine. Mm-hmm. 25 years ago, every artisan, yes, they want to call artisanal, you know,
yes,
and they want to see the guy using the forks, rolling, you know, everything made by hand.
So did you know from the minute you were conscious of chocolate that you wanted to be a pastry chef?
I was not sure because my brother was always the best, and I heard all my life that he's the best. And I
was, what do you mean he was the best? You got the best pastry. What was he best at?
Because he was the firstborn. I was I don't know if you call it the bastard in English.
No, not quite. But you were the
middle child.
Oh, you were the middle child. Okay, and did you have a sister? Or was it three boys?
No, I have a sister too, and pretty much my brother was much older, and I have a chance to work with my father, and things went sour for many times, you know, and I said to myself, and me, when I have a chance to work with you, oh, you cannot work. It was such a bad experience with your brother. Forget about it. And to the age of like 13, they sent me to this incredible man. He was in Saint-Paul-de-Vence. It's a little place on top of Nice, you know.
And that's where Picasso lived.
Exactly.
For a long time,
and right? The Musée Chagall there. Mm. And pretty much the man was, I have to say, and I always said in my first book, he was my mentor. Because he took me under his wing, and pretty much he took me like the son that he never have. And I was working a lot, you know.
How old were you then?
13.
13.
You're not allowed to work when you're 13 in France, but I start to do stage, summer work and everything. And I kind of like it, but my father never want to be pastry chef at this time because it's always a problem when the family, if it's 2-3 pastry chefs, you know, you don't know who is taking over the business. And he was trying to say, oh, you should do catering, you know, catering is perfect for you. Then this, you know, your brother will do pastry, you do catering. And I went to train this gentleman, his name was Monsieur Guignon, and I kind of like it, I love it, and we was doing food, and at the time, tell you the truth, was a very famous pastry shop. We even have a famous actor like Kurt Jurgens, you know, the many people from America, you know, and they used to come the summer, and they have this big house, and we used to make this crazy cake, this crazy wedding cake or holiday cake, and they used to come in the shop, and they all want fraise de bois. Fraise de bois is
are the wild strawberries.
And my boss was drinking scotch with them in the front and was asking me, are you ready with the strawberry tart? I said, it's coming. You know, and pretty much my old boss was entertaining all these big clients and I was making everything in the back. But it was fun, you know, and I pretty much work a lot. And after that, you cannot drive today, stay. And he give me an apartment on top of the bakery. It's much easier like that. Then if you can get up and come down to the bakery.
What time would you have to get up in the morning?
Sometimes we used to get up like on regular day, I think it's like 3:30, 5. And on holiday, I start at midnight.
And what time would you finish?
Maybe like 9 o'clock at night. But you know, it was in the old days.
This is called slavery.
No, it's...
apprenticeship?
Exactly, apprenticeship. But you know, you don't do these things anymore. But I think sometimes if you learn in the hard ways, it's always good.
How long did you live like that with those kinds of hours?
No, but you know, the hour go with a holiday. You know, mm-hmm. Every time is a holiday. You know, you have to understand our business in pastry is almost like a florist. Mm-hmm. A florist, if you have 2 weddings to pull out in the same weekend, mm-hmm. What do you think he will do? He will sleep maybe 3-4 hours in a night. But the idea, you have these 2 big weddings coming up, you have to pull them out together. And the same things for us, you know, when everybody can enjoy the Christmas holiday, where you think you are?
Yeah.
In the basement baking.
Yeah, that's right. So when did you, what was your career path? How did you become the best pastry chef in the world here? You had a mentor. It wasn't your father.
No.
And what did you do after that shop? Didn't you go into the Meilleur Ouvrier de France?
No.
A competition? You didn't try that?
I was not good enough for that. No, it's two kind of people in the world. It's people they love competition, and people they love to please customer. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's two worlds. Some people they love to compete, but I think it's the best competition for me. Is to make the customer happy and the customer come back every day. Mm-hmm. And that's the best competition. Mm-hmm. It's what you put on the plate, mm-hmm. and you make the customer having a desire to come back the next day for over and over for the same things. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is even better. And I stay over there like 5 years at the pastry shop after I went to the army.
And oh, really? Tell me about that.
Well, in France, a long time ago, you have to do 1 year of army. I have a chance to shoot you once again, I think so.
Really? So did they put you in the kitchen?
Yes, I was a sergeant in the kitchen.
What did you make?
Tell you the truth, it was a joke. Because you cannot even believe it was the army, because I went for a month of training. We learned how to shoot, but I used to know how to shoot before. And after that, they say, oh, where you live? In Nice. Oh, we have a caserne. Caserne is a place over there next to Nice. And I was, if I want, almost every night I can go home.
No. Oh, so you were stationed in Nice. Oh, my gosh. And what did they have you do?
And to the end, they say, what is your specialty? I say, cooking, pastry. Okay. You be working for the colonel and you be making the food.
The colonel?
You be making the food for Hollywood.
You know, Alain Seyac, who's the dean at the school, the International Culinary Center, he told me when he was in the Army, he had to get up at 4 in the morning and make the coffee and the breakfast and everything. And one day he was really hungover and he mistakenly put a sack, he made a huge vat of coffee, and he put a sack of salt instead of sugar in the coffee. You know, they put him in jail for a week. So I was waiting for a story like that from you. But okay, no, let's move on from the... You were a good boy in the Army.
I did nothing bad, you know, for that.
Okay. So tell me, in France, how did you come to America, and when did that happen?
But after the Army, you know, you have to do 1 year. But now it's not obligatory anymore. But, mm-hmm. you know, in 5 years, I think it's changed 10 years ago. And after that, I went to... and my dad said, what do you want to do? And I said, you know what? I heard so many times that my brother is the best, that I have no place over here. I said, I want to move. And I went to Paris. Mm-hmm. Alors, I went to Paris, you know.
What's that like, coming from Nice, going to Paris? What was Paris in your mind?
Paris is like, it's a little bit like New York. You know, I think Nice is a great city, but it's older city. It's more like a vacation city. It's less challenging. Mm-hmm. If you really want to be good on what you do, and if you have a drive to do what you want and to be on top of the game or your game, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's a big city like Paris, mm-hmm. where people are exposed to a lot of things, mm-hmm. and they will be exposed to learn and to discover different things than you will offer to them. Mm-hmm. Nice is, I will say, is a little bit more boring, mm-hmm. than Paris. And I work in Paris, you know, in the 2-3 stars. Alors, I work in a very good restaurant. Was 2 star, was Le Toit de Passy and everything. But the boss, you know, was so narrow-minded. You know, everybody in France, sometimes they are very close-minded. And I was not able to do things, you know, because, you know, in France, it's my way or the highway. At least that's my way too. And after that, I moved and I went to a 3-star. And everybody was talking about so much about, you know, was La Tour d'Argent. Mm-hmm. But it was very difficult for me to work because...
Now, that's a 3-star Michelin, it was famous historic restaurant. And so you went there to work?
Yeah, I went
because there it was 3-star?
No, yeah, because it was famous, it was 3-star. But over there, too, was a little bit disappointing because the pastry, what they want, was so classical, like a millefeuille, you know, the bread. Everything was so boring. You know, and I was expecting to go to a fancy place like that and try to be able to create things. And after that, I put my resume at the same time at Lucas Carton. Mm-hmm. And finally, they called me for an interview. I go there. And I start to meet the chef. I was not sure if I have to call him chef or sir because he wore a chef jacket and... what do you call that? The shirt on the bottom, the bow tie, you know. I don't know if he was a businessman at the same time, but, you know, when you're young, I was 19. Yeah. I don't know if I have to call him chef, sir. I say, yeah, good morning, how are you? And he say, oh, we're looking for a pastry chef. You know, I say, okay, I like to try. And I really like it because his philosophy was very different. Was very, very difficult to work for him too because... he have a philosophy of what he want, and he want to create dessert, then they don't look like dessert. Everything has to be inspired of something. And I tell you the truth, you know, he's some of the dessert that he created to give me an inspiration for me for my next dessert, if you want to have a dessert on the menu, was like an orange tart. The perception of the orange tart for him was just a little disc of puff pastry, little cream, and this orange candy standing up like that.
Like the Eiffel Tower.
Exactly. You know, and I was looking at it and I said, are you sure that's a tart? You know, but, you know, and that's the idea, you know, but he was serving that with the orange segment, with the sorbet, dark chocolate and everything. And pretty much, you know, I will say then will be my second mentor, because he opened my mind very much about creating things that people don't expect. Mm-hmm. You know, surprising things. Mm-hmm. With not like a molecular food like what he is right now, but surprising people with different things. And because what a good is to go to Daniel or Thomas Keller or all the big chef in New York, if you have a creme brulee, for that you stay and you go to the bistro. Mm-hmm. If you have a chocolate souffle, you go there. If it's an experience, or if it's a birthday, if you have money, you can go every night. But for the occasion, you're going to have your mind set up for tonight will be an experience. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea, tonight, you will be in a different mindset, and you will say, rose water, I never tried. And you will go for. Mm-hmm. Then pretty much if you go to the pastry shop, you will see rose water, you say, oh, I don't like these things, I never even tried.
Right.
And that's the whole idea about going to this fancy restaurant. And it's very difficult sometimes to explain to people, because when you go to this place, you know that you're going to have an experience. And you are your mindset working very different, and you be even open yourself to try different things.
Right. And the restaurants are a great place to try things, because somebody's made it well, and you're tasting it. But we're going to have to take a break right now. We'll be right back. Can't wait to hear how you crossed the pond and came to the States.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Well, welcome back. You're listening to Chef Story, and I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton from the International Culinary Center in Manhattan. And today my guest is none other than the great pastry chef François Payard. And I remember, François, when you first arrived in New York, your first job was, I think, at Le Cirque.
Yes.
Correct? And I met you on the back of a bus. We were all going up to Hunter for the chef ski race. Yeah. And you were one wild and happy guy, I will say. I was so happy. We were all so happy. And it was kind of a weird situation, because I think you were in the kitchen with Jacques Torres. There were two amazing pastry chefs in those days in the same kitchen. We'll get there in a few minutes. But what brought you to the United States?
But tell you the truth, after Paris, you know, I used to have a lot of clients going to the restaurant, and they say, oh, one day you should go to New York. And I say to myself, why not? You know, I was young, I was 23 or 24, and I was not speaking English. My English is still very bad. I have a very, very thick accent.
Oh, he's very nice now. I like it. I like the accent. Speak very well.
But I have a very thick accent, and I say, oh, why not going to New York? And Jack say, oh, we should come, you know. And
Jacques Torres.
Exactly. And he say, you come to Le Cirque, blah, blah, blah. And I flew there, you know, I arrived, you know, and the first 6 months, you know, I was trying to go to school in the morning. It was very difficult. And working at Le Cirque at night, because we finish.
Oh, the school for English.
Yeah, and the kitchen, we finish at 1 o'clock at night, going back home, 6:30 in the morning, get up to go to learn English. It happened a few times I fell asleep, you know, in class, but that's the reason why my English is so poor right now.
So what was it like having two chefs in the kitchen? How did you divide up the, you know, he invited you over. Was it ever kind of testy, you know, a little rough?
It was very different, you know, because, you know, when you come from France, it's very difficult to adapt to New York first. You have to understand that when you are in France, when you do a service, it's no more than 60 to 80 people. Mm-hmm. It's not like 250 or 350 people like in New York. And I think even if you're good or so-so, it will take you 6 months to adapt to New York. New York is a very different speed and everything. It was a great experience for me to see what was New York, you know, and Jack, you know, was a very good experience. We have different approach, different philosophy, and I think it's great because we learn from each other. But the idea was very shocking, you know, when you come from a three-star in France and come to Le Cirque when it's a noisy kitchen, everybody screaming, you know, and in France nobody even want to talk because when the chef speak, you know, you cannot even talk about, you know, and was a very different approach. It was a great, great experience. And after that, I moved to Le Bernardin. Mm-hmm. And I was a pastry chef for like 2.5 years.
Was that when Gilbert Lecoz was
yes,
there?
Yes, I was with Gilbert and Ebrard Muller, and after Eric arrived. And Eric, you know, really, really changed the whole philosophy of Le Bernardin. And it was great because Eric was young, like we are the same age, you know, and I think it was good because even if it was an incredible restaurant at the time, bringing a new blood, revive the whole restaurant and everything. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there like for 3.5 years, I think so. Mm-hmm. And after that, I opened Miami with Brasserie Lecoz with Gilbert again. And that was another different experience because New York is New York and Miami is completely different. Mm-hmm. And Gilbert, I remember, was pulling his hair because people was coming in shorts in the restaurant. I said, what do you expect in Miami? They come in shorts, bathing suit, you know. That's the way.
And they can't eat dessert because they don't look good in shorts and bathing suits.
And pretty much was a great experience, you know, and we opened Miami. I was going back and forth sometime and everything. And after, I was lucky, then Daniel used to come to the restaurant very often and asked me to came with him to open the first Daniel, you know, because he was a chef at Le Cirque before that. Mm-hmm. And we opened Daniel. It was a very big challenge because, you know, it was the first challenge for Daniel to be on his own too and for myself to be behind. And pretty much I stayed there like for 5 years, you know, we have a great synergy together and everything. And I was lucky enough to have a lot of good guys working for me, and now they pretty much...
Were they all French?
No, they was not all French, you know, and pretty much, you know, they all work in a very good restaurant like Johnny. I took
Johnny Uzzini.
When he was 19, I used to play with him because I used to press his nose, my finger, and I tell him, when I press his nose, he still have milk coming out, like in a baby. I used to have David Carmichael.
No wonder he's damaged. No, I'm kidding, Johnny. I love Johnny.
And after that, I used to have David Carmichael. Another crazy guy, you know, and we used to do big production on Monday, and one day he forgot the caramel on the stove, and Daniel was screaming, you put the kitchen on fire, you crazy, you know, many stories, but a lot of, very few French, you know, tell you the truth, Lincoln Carson was American, a lot of few French, like Greg, you know, but pretty much, you know, the things, you know, at Daniel, he was always one or two French, and always a mix of people, you know, pretty much.
Was there a different mentality in cooking between American chefs and French chefs? Because you went through this awful apprenticeship where you know, sleeping 4 hours a night and getting up at 3:30 in the morning, and Americans don't do that. So did you find a different kind of work ethic?
I think they don't do that now, but in the 20 years ago, I think a lot of people...
We abused Americans as well.
No, I think people, they used to understand and you have to pay your dues before you get there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you ask Johnny, he used to work long hours before when we opened Daniel, you know, all the guy. I think the problem now is maybe the TV changed philosophy of people. Because everybody dream to be the next Iron Chef, the next things, but they forgot. Then before you get there,
you have to
pay your dues.
Right.
And I think the TV give you sometimes a wrong image of things.
Yeah.
Because you know what? What we do, it doesn't come very easy. And what you do, most of the people, they spend 10 hours a day in the kitchen or whatever they do to be where they are right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so then after you were at Danielle for 5 years, is that when you went off on your own?
Yes, and I always tell Danielle that my dream was to open a place, like a pastry shop and a restaurant together. And I tell Danielle, you know, and he knew that I was going to leave, or at the time I don't know people to raise money and everything. And Danielle was smart enough to tell me, oh, let's do together. And with his partner, he helped me, and we opened Paya. And Paya was really like an instant success. You know,
that was on Lexington Avenue in 74th?
Exactly, because it was really like I don't want to say it was the first pastry shop, because it's a bad way to say, but was really like the first pastry shop, grandiose, like that.
It was grandiose. It was beautiful. It
was big, you know, and the bistro, because Monsieur Bonté was there just before that, and it was a great place too, but big space. And I think, you know, what I'm really proud about that is to say lucky that we opened Paillard, because I don't think in New York will be so many pastry shops now, mm-hmm. if it was not somebody or we have a chance to open the first one, mm-hmm. and to see that it was a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the problem is always somebody have to test the market, mm-hmm. to see how people respond
there,
to it.
There is a huge difference between American bakeries, where we have cakes and we call eclairs, you know, eclairs, and donuts and jelly donuts. And I mean, I love that. I grew up with that. And but a French pâtisserie is, you get these incredibly intricate, wonderfully crafted, artisanal pieces of pastry that you can buy individually or a whole tart that cost maybe triple because of the products used in it, the chocolate used in it, and then the amount of man hours that goes into creating it. And I think your shop really shocked people because of the artistry and the artisanal and just the absolute beauty and the depth of flavor, the complexity of flavor for a consumer to buy that. In Paris, you see pâtisseries all over, but in New York, you were truly, you know, you were a gift to the Upper East Side. You're a gift to New York.
But I think little by little people understand. At the beginning, I think people, they don't know how to put a price on the cake. Because we only put price on produce like Gucci bag, things that you show to people.
Yes.
And what you put in your stomach, people was not ready to put price. You go to Costco, I'm sorry to say, you buy a whole half sheet cake for $20.
Sheet cake, he was saying, everybody.
You know, you go to my place, you have only 4 individual pastries for this price. But you know, that's the difference. But it's not about quantity, it's about quality. But more and more, I think people get exposed. You know, things change in 20 years. You know, I remember when I first come to Le Cirque, we used to have a push car with dessert. Then you don't see anymore, only like a classical place will do to keep tradition.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's right or wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think the pastry changed a lot for the last 20 years. And you can see all over the city, you know, all these bakeries, many different bakeries, even become more difficult for me. Because every day, you know, when I opened downtown, it used to be...
Okay, wait. Pushing ahead here. We're going to get to downtown in a minute. But with Paillard, you had a restaurant, like a brasserie in the back, right? And it was the shop in front. And you started making chocolates as well. I remember going in the basement. You had one of the first chocolate-making factories in New York.
It was a very small machine.
Why did you decide to start making chocolates?
Because, you know, when you have a pastry shop in France, normally, you're supposed to have 4 certificates. Pastry, ice cream, chocolate and confiserie.
Okay, so the certificates, you mean that you as a chef has to pass the exams
to and get
you're certified as a, this is, you know, something we don't have here. So this very interesting. So it was candies?
Candy.
Chocolate?
Chocolate. No, candy is chocolate. Candy, ice cream, pastry, and confectionaries. I mean, caramel, nougat, things like that.
Oh, that are not chocolate.
And that is, we call that in France, confiserie.
Okay.
And really, when you pass your exam, you have to be able to do these four kind of, it's like pretty much like a chef. You have
right.
to be able to
skill
do
skill sets.
Skill, you know. The garde-manger, the mm-hmm. fish, the meat, mm-hmm. and you should have a little knowledge on pastry, mm-hmm. you know, and pretty much is what we should have. That's the reason Bayard before was all this window wrong when you arrive. It was all the viennoiserie, was a cake, and on the other side was a petit four, the cookies, the chocolate, mm-hmm. and the ice cream. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason then I have to make my own chocolate. I don't think she was right. If I open Payard and buy chocolate from Guitar, Valrhona, doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Why are you going to my place if I buy the chocolate and repack in my own box? Doesn't make any sense.
See, that's so French. It's so French. The fact that you actually have to get certified. You know, I love going into a French market and you see the peaches. And the peaches are classified.
Yes.
And you will pay more for, you know, the better quality peach because they codify and they appreciate the nuance and the quality.
But, you know, not just French. If you think about Japanese,
oh, they
like French or even
yes,
worse than French.
They are.
They have a melon for $120.
Yes.
Melon. I don't think in New York only a few people will say, what?
Yes.
$120 for melon?
Yes. Yes, that's a whole nother universe there. But the fact, so it just shows the appreciation of quality and the fact that you felt if you're going to have a proper pastry store, that you had to have the everything from croissant to ice cream and chocolate bonbon.
And I keep the same philosophy all the time.
Right.
I refuse and I tell people, I don't care if people think I'm crazy because I work every day, but I refuse to buy something. If you come to my shop now, or before, or always I have a shop, we make everything from scratch. And I think I should be proud, and I'm proud of it. I never work in the hotel in my life, and I never want to open an hotel one day, because I'm not qualified to open Kent, and and I'm not qualified to open Box, and then pack the croissant and put them on the tray. I don't have this competence.
Okay, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about your new store.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Well, welcome back. And I just want to do a shout out to Andrew White. That's his guitar playing in St. Patrick's Parade. And today we're talking to François Payard, one of the great pastry chefs who's from France but has been living in the States for the last 30 years. And
24.
24, okay. That's in between 20 and 30. And we're just talking about the really iconic shop he opened on Lexington Avenue on the Upper East Side and really changed the put up the benchmark for all pastry shops. Everybody then had to up their game because of what you did. But now you have François Payard Bakery, and you're on Houston Street and many other, what do you have, five locations? Or what? Tell me what you did. And you went from this really fancy, I mean, I thought I was in Paris every time I was in that shop. And now your whole style is different. What happened? Why'd you change?
We changed because when you change a location, everything changed. And we lost a lease, and many things happen. I have to find a new partner, new backer, you know, and everything. And my backer have an idea to open bakeries. And his idea is, you know, I know you want your dream back. My dream was Payard, you know, but for a little while I focus on doing a bakery. And a bakery is, you know, I really want people to understand, it's completely different, a pastry shop and a bakery. What's a bakery? A bakery is convivial. It's something that you come every day. It's more rustic, it's more simple, it's what more basic, let's say in English. And a pastry shop is something much more refined, where you find creation, when you find chocolate, and you don't really find in the bakery. You see, my bakery is not really a bakery because I have chocolate. But it's completely different world. And for a little while, I focus on the bakery and I say, what really we have in France and make a bakery different? Alors, I took all the traditional cake from France, like the gâteau basque, the flan, you know, like the gâteau lorrain, things like that. And we see in the bakery, lemon tart. And we create this new bakery, you know, FPB. And I think the one from downtown, the original one, is not the most beautiful, but it's the most authentic.
This is the one on Houston Street, yes, between Sullivan and Thompson.
Because if you think about the bakery, you think about something rustic. You think about, see, the bread, the baguette, and the floor is like concrete floor. And I think, you know, after looking all of the tour of the bakery, it's not the most beautiful, but it's the most authentic for me. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was lucky to approach by Goldman Sachs to open one bakery in Goldman Sachs. They asked me to tweak a little bit the concept because they wanted a bit more polish.
Who knew Goldman Sachs had such a good palate? I'm very impressed. This is their great building downtown where, you know, when after the flood of Sandy, it was the only lit building because they have their own generators and
exactly.
Everything. Did your bakery get flooded in
Nothing.
Sandy? Nothing, because, I don't know, Fortress Goldman, you know. So they asked you to... Oh, so could you double the price because of the clientele?
No, because, you know, don't forget, you know, it's not only rich people working at Goldman. Mm. They have a lot of secretary, they have a lot of employee, and they want really a good bakery. You know, we took the same idea and we tweaked it a bit by having like a marble floor, but it's beautiful, but I don't think it looks as polished as an authentic boulangerie in Paris than you will see. Mm-hmm. And that was the second one, and I think it's... Well, I'm very happy with this one, too. It's very good. It's in good location across from Shake Shack. Mm-hmm. People get a burger. They come to dessert for us, you know, coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. And after that, we opened at the Plaza. And the Plaza, we was there, but we changed two or three times place because they remodulated the old Plaza Hotel. And they changed for the food court, you know, and Todd English food court. And now we have a beautiful little pastry shop over there. That was the third one. And after that, we opened another one in the Columbus Circle. And Columbus Circle was in a very, very big building, in the three Columbus Circle. And the building was empty for like 6 months. And little by little, the building, people are moving now, is already 60% of capacity. And the bakery, we decide, knowing that it'd be like 20,000 people in the building, we have to make this bakery much bigger than the other one. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when 20,000 people come down, they're not going to your shop. Maybe 1% is enough for us, you know. And we decide to make this one as a bigger bakery, and that's the biggest bakery we have. And the same things, they wanted it more polished, you know. I really like this one. It's very open, high ceiling, you know, and it's different. But you know what, I was not very pleased because a bakery is not really Payard. And really it took me like 2 years to find the right location. And finally, I found the location on 3rd Avenue, and I reopened the Payard. And the Payard is very different. I get a lot of feedback, sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's not like the old Payard. It's more modern. It's not as warm as before. It's not this, but it's very difficult to recreate the same atmosphere.
That's true.
And the idea was not to shock people, but kind of shocking them by, say, the new paillard is more fresh. Mm-hmm. We change all the packaging. Mm-hmm. No more butter and cream color becomes the new orange. Mm-hmm. And orange, by the way, is color of the year. And I think everybody now loves the orange color because I get a lot of comments on this one already. And orange, new packaging, new line of chocolate, introducing Valrhona to be very, not because they're expensive, but very high-end chocolate for people. They want something darker. And Upper East Side, people, I don't want to say they're more sophisticated. It's not that they're more exposed to very dark chocolate.
Other trends and
exactly.
New trends. And how has pastry changed in the last 10 years?
I think the pastry, I've even sometimes more evolution than cooking for the last 10 years.
Really? It's moving more dynamically, huh?
More dynamically because, you know, they're more versatile, you know, than sometimes they do in the kitchen. And I think, you know, more and more people, and you can see.
Give us an example.
I will say 20 years ago, if you look by pound, what consumer in America was using chocolate by consumer, mm-hmm. you will see the last 10 years an incredible increase. I don't remember the pound. Before, it was only talking about Switzerland.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about 10 years ago. Make a survey in America, ask most of American people, what's the best chocolate? Everybody will say milk. Now, everybody will say bittersweet or dark.
Yes.
Why? You see the change?
Yes.
Because if you still reach middle of America, people will think about milk chocolate. But, you know, for most people, you know, they become exposed to bittersweet, extra bitter and everything. And now the taste bud change. And more...
So they're not as... They don't need as much sweetness. I think the use of caramel and salt and some savory items also have crept in, that they can appreciate more nuance.
More nuance, and they're more exposed. You know, even yourself, you know, when you go to a restaurant, sometimes you will find a new flavor that intrigue you. Maybe, I don't know, Thai basil, let's say. Then you know what? You will retry this flavor. It will take you a little while in your mind to remember this flavor, you know, you try it, and to put the name on it, you know. And the same things, people are exposed a lot more. You know, dark chocolate become very healthy. You know, people want to eat a little bit less sweet than before. I think, you know, the last 10 years, the way we eat too, changed a little bit. And I think more and more people see that there's a lot of good things in the dark chocolate, and more people like to move on the dark. And little by little, you will see then they will become almost like in Paris, eating mostly dark chocolate. And the milk will become for the kids.
Right. So 10 years ago, you were really, you had your pastry shop and you were doing your pastry chef thing. Now you have 5 locations and you're turning into a businessman. I mean, how much... Every day, are you working with pastry? Are you cooking? Are you making management and business decisions? Because when you have multiple locations, that's a whole different kettle of fish. Chocolate.
I do both. Like this morning, you know, I was at 5 making chocolate before you pick me up. Wednesday, I do a lot, always chocolate, because we do the chocolate production every Wednesday. But, you know, pretty much I create all the new cake in Paillard or in the bakery. I always create a new cake. I don't make them every day, but every day I make my own to every shop. But having many shops doesn't mean I can be there in 5 different shops every day. But, you know, I structure myself with somebody. I have a retail operation manager, a young lady, and she's going every day to every shop, and only me know her schedule. By doing that, is not just having the picture of me on the wall good enough, is having somebody going to check on every shop every day. You know, it's all about quality. It's all about consistency. And people are people. You know, if we remove all the BlackBerry to people and the iPhone, we'll be more performing.
Yes.
You know, even if we don't allow it, sometimes you see somebody picking up and still drive me crazy. But you know what? Is a new technology sometimes, you know, and you have to accept.
You have to move on. Do you know the whole show? It's done. But I have one question for you. I cannot leave without asking you this question. What is your favorite dessert?
If I have to choose one, it would be like my dad. Ice cream and cookies.
What kind of ice cream and what kind of cookie?
Every ice cream you want, but no dessert.
François, merci mille fois. Thank you so much for being here today.
Merci, Dorothy.
And I want to thank Jack Inslee and Robin Cohen for helping produce this show, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.